What's up, Internet, and welcome back to Main Gadget Podcast. I'm Senior Editor Devendra Hardawar. This week, I'm also joined with podcast producer Ben Elman. Hey, Ben.
Let's talk about that PS5 Pro. I'm thinking about it.
We've got some fun guests to chat with. Stay tuned to hear from them. As always, folks, if you're enjoying the show, please be sure to subscribe to us on iTunes or your podcatcher of choice. Leave us a review on iTunes and drop us an email at podcast@engadget.com. Also, join us Thursday mornings, typically around 10:45 a.m. Eastern, for our live stream on our YouTube channel. I'm looking at folks here now in the chat. It is always fun to see the crowd and to get a live response from folks. And sometimes we can show off gadgets, not today, but, you know, pop in. Maybe that'll happen. So joining us to talk about some gaming stuff, and especially the PlayStation 5 Pro, is Senior Editor Jessica Condit. Hey, Jess, how's it going?
Hey, all right. Happy to be here on a Thursday morning.
Very excited. Happy to have you here, and also happy to have you here talking about hardware, because I know it's always a fun time. And like, new console stuff is always exciting, although we're going to talk about the PlayStation 5 Pro, which is a very, very weird thing. So, you know, briefly, for people, can you tell us, what is the PlayStation 5 Pro? Why does it exist? And then we'll talk about your thoughts with it.
Yeah, so the Pro is Sony's latest definitive version of the PS5. So this is the most powerful the console is going to get. It can basically, what it can do is handle 4K gaming at 60 frames per second for like every game. That's the power that this console has. That's the big thing it can do. It comes with this technology PSSR, which is an upscaling technology.
I'm sorry, Jess, Sony. We call that Pisser.
Pisser.
The official name is Pisser. What are you
Very
doing,
upsetting.
Sony?
Wow. They don't think about these things. You can see Mark Cerny sitting in a dark room saying PSSR. That's perfect. There's nothing wrong with that.
And then he's ignoring all the chuckles, all the like snorts from the room. What's so funny, guys? What are you laughing at? Pisser. PSSR.
But it is very impressive technology. Mm-hmm. It's an upscaling tech. It uses AI. And it fills in at the pixel level details, so you get an even higher perceived resolution is kind of the idea. In a pretty simple interface for developers to work with, you can kind of apply this to most games and see a benefit from it, along with PS5 Pro Game Boost, which also kind of upgrades a lot of backward compatible games. PS4 games will look better on the Pro. It's a new console. It needs to be supported by developers in order to actually, I think, see some benefit. We're going to need to see a lot more games take advantage of these really high-end things that the console can do. It can support up to 8K gaming, but like, that's not really a thing at this point, right? There are no games running at that. No one has an 8K TV. But it theoretically can do that, so it's powerful.
It can produce awesome, an 8K amount of pixels, but we really have to talk about what these companies mean when they say 8K gaming or 8K TV in general. But,
right, and in our preview, 8K gaming is in quotes
Thank you for that. I applauded when I saw that, Jess. When we talked about when Sony announced this thing, it's like, okay, a more powerful PS5, cool. Seems kind of soon. Seems like this is happening very quickly, although it's been 4 years and time just doesn't mean anything anymore. But also, it's $700. And I'm just thinking, like the Simpsons thing, $700 dues. What? That's the PlayStation 3. I remember the higher tier when that launched at $600. People like freaked out about that. And also that alone, I know that thing had a lower tier $500 SKU, but that pricing, just seeing that number, I think helped to kill that generation of PlayStation just a bit. Xbox 360 like totally won that. How do you feel about the pricing, Jess? Do you think there is an audience who will pay $700 dues for a freaking PS5?
Absolutely. Yeah, I didn't balk at the price the same way a lot of people did, because I see this as something that's built for a smaller market. Like, Sony wasn't targeting everyone. Everyone who wanted a PS5 probably has a PS5. This is for people who have money to burn and who really like playing PlayStation. Right? Like, it truly is. It's for people with money who play a lot of PlayStation. And this is an awesome upgrade. It's kind of like fan service in that way, but you have to pay $700 for it. That's fine. Honestly, I see the market for this. I know it's not for everyone. And I mean, it's also true that you do not need this console. Like, this was the heart of the preview, was like, yeah, it's nice. The games definitely look and feel better on Pro. You can choose to have 4K at 60 instead of having to do 4K at 30, or you know, any combination of those. You don't have to pick and choose between all these specs. And that's awesome. But like, yeah, this isn't, you don't need it. Like the PS5 is still a very powerful console. Yeah. It still renders great games, great looking games. And there's nothing wrong. If you have a PS5, you do not need to rush out and get a PS5 Pro just because. But if you have the cash to spare and you like playing PS5, this is a cool upgrade. It's nice.
I think part of the tension here is it also feels like, I keep feeling like this generation just hasn't quite begun. And I feel like people keep saying that, but it's like, yeah, these consoles came out in the fall of 2020. You know, we were in the midst of the pandemic.
And you weren't even able to really get
them. You weren't able to get it. Although that,
what, like mid 2021, if that?
That is what told Sony that people were willing to pay $700 plus for a PlayStation 5. And I don't think they forgot that. Like, I know people who personally scalped a lot of PlayStation 5s and like were making a lot of money doing that. So that, the hardcore gamer market was willing to spend that much money. Maybe that was a pandemic thing, but I think this will probably sell well for Sony. It just feels like, to me, it still feels like, man, didn't the PlayStation 5 just arrive? Maybe it's just because we didn't get as many games as we did for like the PlayStation 4 at the same amount of time or other generations. It feels like because of the pandemic and because of other industry issues, including like all the labor issues, the tremendous amount of layoffs and consolidation within the industry, it feels like the games themselves also haven't, we haven't really gotten those games. And what's wild is that we're still seeing games come out and they'll hit these new consoles. And then Ubisoft or somebody will be like, you know, we could just downscale this to the PlayStation 4. So we're just going to put this game on an older console now because people still have those things. Does this generation feel weird to you, Jess?
Yeah, it has been. No, I think you're absolutely right that the pandemic, you know, this generation started in 2020. That was the pandemic year. Everything was thrown off. Layoffs have been insane. But this is how the industry works now. We work on a cycle of crunch and layoffs, and that's truly built into business plans. So we can't be surprised by this anymore. It is the norm, and it's very sad. I don't think it should be, but that is what the industry does. I think we have had some really notable games this generation. We have had some awesome experiences. I think this year has been pretty good. But there hasn't been, like, yeah, that huge tentpole AAA situation. We don't have, like, new franchises being spawned necessarily at the AAA level.
Yeah.
Right. We're on the back end of all these things. And these larger studios are trying to figure out what to do with their IP, what to do with all these studios that they've bought now, Microsoft. And it's tough. Like, a lot of them are kind of in limbo and a lot of them are kind of stagnant, which is why I play a lot of indie games. And
Shout out to indie games.
I encourage everyone to do this. Yeah, it's just the way to be.
We're also so coming Jess, off of... go ahead, Ben. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so Jess, my big question is, how long is the PS5 Pro going to be the top of the line? How long is it before PS6? Could be just a year and a half or so, right?
Maybe, but maybe this is going to extend that timeline. I'm not really sure. I haven't thought about what this means for the PS6 as much. I could see 2 years getting a PS6. And being fine. And I think that makes the Pro worthwhile still. Like, personally, I think that's fine. Yeah.
I mean, when the PlayStation 4 Pro hit, was that 2015, 2016? Basically, it was another 4 years before the next console. So,
right. Our timelines are getting longer. So maybe even longer. Yeah.
Maybe even longer is the thing. So, I mean, you got to play this thing, Jess. And I think one thing I took away from your hands-on is that I think you are noticing that leap from 30 FPS to 60 FPS now, right? Like, more than other systems. Like, it just seems like you were really calling that out. Was that a noticeable difference when playing, like, a game side-by-side a normal PS5?
Well, that was the cool thing about the media event that I went to. This was at Sony Studios in San Mateo. They just had a room full of developers, and they had one screen over one screen, and the game was running in the same area, you know, on both screens, but one was on a PS5 and one was on a Pro. So I could really compare, and I would start playing the normal PS5 game and be like, yeah, this feels great, this feels fine, and then switch to the Pro. And that feeling of going from 30 to 60 and the resolution staying the same or looking even better is, I mean, really convincing, right? Like, it really was like, oh, right, this is how The Last of Us Part 2 is supposed to feel. Right. Even that game that's kind of slow and plodding, like, you can feel that switch to 60 frames. And like Final Fantasy VII Rebirth, I don't think that game looks bad on PS5, but put it next to a Pro and it's like, dang, that's kind of fuzzy, isn't it? And
there's Digital Foundry did
Digital
a video
Foundry,
like
their videos,
with the direct comparisons, and it's like, it's the original PS5 version looks nice, but it's like there's a layer of like Vaseline on it, and then switch to PS5 Pro and it's like, oh, crisp textures, crisp grass, detail on faces.
Yeah, I was watching that right before we started recording, and it looks really good. I just wonder, what screen do you think would make the best use of this? Because right now, I'm playing PS5 Standard Edition, not Pro, of course, on a computer monitor. I have like an all-in-one like desk and work situation. And so do you think it would be worth it to get a like 4K TV to see like everything in larger, crisper detail?
I'm
4K
sure Sony
monitor
wants that.
Would
I'm
be
sure
okay.
Sony is
yes,
like, hey,
buy a Sony TV OLED. Along yes. with your, yeah, yeah, yeah.
I had someone in my threads saying, okay, so I want a Pro. Should I get a new expensive TV that I can't afford in order to enjoy the Pro? And I said, no, do not buy shit you can't afford. Don't do that. Like, if you can't afford a Pro, you don't need one. If you can't afford the TV, you don't need one. Even with the Pro, like, this person had a 2-year-old Bravia TV. I was like, the Pro will be
no,
fine.
It's fine.
Yeah.
It's
yeah,
fine.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, you do not need to upgrade. So, yeah.
If you mm-hmm. 4K with HDR, like, if you
That's
have
it.
That.
If you have 4K, you're yeah. fine. Yeah. Yeah.
I don't think I know people were also talking about like this system, the Pro can also hit 4K at 120 hertz in some cases, so you get a 120 FPS. Did you see demos of that? Because that's like the thing where I like it enough, it's just fine on PC gaming, but I feel like on a TV you don't need that many frames on a giant screen. Did you see 120 FPS?
It's kind of imperceptible, right? Yeah, no, I think F1 had a mode where it was 120. But no, that wasn't as much of a leap, right? 30 to 60 is huge. 60 to 120, yeah, I haven't necessarily felt that same power from that jump. But yeah, hey, F1 looked really good. Ray tracing, advanced ray tracing in these games, Hogwarts Legacy and F1 were like noticeably, the reflections were amazing. Ambient occlusion was awesome. The ray tracing just kind of added depth and life to these worlds. It's really nice. So that's another benefit of the Pro. Yeah.
It's like Marge Simpson's. I just think it's neat. I just think ray tracing is neat. And it is a helpful thing. I think Sony's missing a large opportunity of just like a lot of posters saying, come get your pisser. Because that's really... That's really all it is. Like, come get your AI upscaled 4K rendering, please. Like, this is, so it's doing the same thing, a similar thing that NVIDIA's DLSS does on PCs.
Exactly.
And that has been a huge, huge benefit to ray tracing, to playing games in 4K or at least semi 4K. I can't PC game without it, really. It's just an essential thing. Can you tell us more about the ray tracing, Jess? Like, was it super noticeable versus the base model? Because I'm old enough to remember when Sony was like, yeah, this PlayStation 5 going to do ray tracing, also going to do 4K gaming. They're not going to say, we didn't say both at the same time, but they did really talk about those features at the base PS5. And now it feels like even they're acknowledging like the base PS5 can't do it very well.
Not really. Like, it can do ray tracing, but now they're calling it advanced ray tracing, right?
Right.
Like, the thing the Pro can do is actual ray tracing. Uh-huh, that's uh-huh. kind of what it feels
for
like
real.
They're saying.
Ray tracing for real.
No, truly. Yeah. Yeah. So it's no, it was huge. It was a huge difference. And I noticed it. Yeah, especially like Hogwarts Legacy was really cool. Cause like when Sony did their demo, their like live stream announcement event for the PS5 Pro, they showed some games and Hogwarts was one of them. And it was like, is that better? I don't know. Like mm-hmm, that looks kind of like Hogwarts. But seeing it at this event, the lighting on the stones of the castle was like kind of, It made me want to like play again. I haven't played Hogwarts Legacy since I finished it, you know, but like I kind of wanted to play again because it was like you could see the texture. You could see how slick some of the stones were. You could see the stained glass windows reflecting on the stones in this really, really pretty, really grounding way. So yeah, like that was super noticeable. Same with F1. I mean, Gran Turismo was there. Also The Crew, like all these racing games. So I got to see all those and they all benefited. Like, it was noticeable in all
That's
of these
cool.
games. Yeah.
That's cool. It's good to hear. I mean, listen, this is stuff we've been talking about ray tracing on the PC gaming side for years. I think a lot of people got excited when Sony and Microsoft were talking about it for these new consoles, but it ended up being that compromise, right? Either if you want ray tracing, you're playing 30 FPS. Maybe with 4K, maybe 4K rendering or semi 4K or something. But if you want the fast 60 FPS, you have to give up the resolution and you have to give up ray tracing. And I guess Sony is finally delivering the no compromise console that they initially promised 4 years ago. No compromise. That seems like the main selling point here, right?
Yeah. And like, it was interesting because a lot of the advancements we were talking about, it's bringing consoles closer to a PC level, right, of power. But this is still a console. Like, I asked a few of the developers, like, is this closer to developing for PC or is this still very, and they were like, no, this is not like PC. It's a more powerful console, but it's a very contained system, which is the benefit of consoles, right? You can have developers building for one machine and it can handle everything they know it can handle. It's in this little box. There's no surprises. No one's going to have a different PS5 Pro. So like that, I really appreciate console gaming for that. And I like that Sony is leaning into what it does best, which is make hardware, console hardware. Like this is what they do. And I really, really appreciate the Pro from that angle. But no, this isn't like, we're not veering into PC territory in any way. This is still very much a console, you know, in a box.
I guess, but you were fair. It was fair to ask that question, Jess, because like essentially what they're doing is like every 3 or 4 years, a PC gamer may swap out their GPU and add in a new one. And that's essentially what happened here, because the PS5 Pro is running a whole new AMD Radeon GPU. I think they talked about the memory bandwidth being much better, but it is the same CPU that they mm-hmm. released 4 years ago. And that's the sort of thing where I feel like a PC gamer would be like, $700 for a whole new system for that. I guess some people pay $700 for a GPU. So I guess that kind of makes sense. And they keep their old CPU. But the trade-off just seems weird. At the very least, though, like I reviewed the PlayStation VR 2, which is a nice piece of hardware, but it seemed like it cost way too much and Sony didn't know how to support it. I reviewed the PlayStation Portal, which is $200 freaking streaming device, and I really did not like what Sony was doing with those pieces of hardware, even though they did some things well. Jess, do you think this one at least is more compelling than those last few products?
Well, I actually don't have as many problems with the Portal. I have one.
You're lucky
house.
If your internet works well with the Portal. Like that's the thing. If you're in a contained space, then exactly. Yes, it's great. Yeah.
If your Wi-Fi is okay, you know, there are use cases for these things. They're not for everyone, especially at $200. Yeah, I get that.
That's what I can't get over. It's just like, what do you...
I don't know. Yeah. I even just reviewed Razer's new Wolverine controller, and that's $200. And I was like, yeah, seems right. So maybe I'm a little far off, but I've come to expect a few hundred dollars for any of these pieces of hardware, honestly. I like the Portal, and actually, like, I know it's awful. This morning, though, there was the sale for the 30th anniversary editions of all these consoles. The Sony has a limited number of PlayStation Pros that are like bundled in a 30th anniversary package. They look old school. They're very, very cool. They're already sold out, but like the Portal also comes in that package. And those are, yeah, like that went on sale this morning and it's already like gone.
I think Sony's aware that people will spend the money even if like something seems overpriced and maybe like of limited like usefulness, but I'm glad you're finding it useful. I was just so frustrated with the Portal, and maybe the Wi-Fi was not great. Like I have good Wi-Fi, but I think their software early on was kind of a disaster, but I hear it's working better for people, so that's great. So okay, we are waiting. The PlayStation 5 Pro is coming out in early November. We'll likely hear more about that soon. I'm looking forward to one of us will get time with it at some point for a full mm-hmm. review
at home.
Anything else you want to add about I guess where things are going now for PlayStation? We also saw a bunch of game announcements too. You know, that's where they announced like things like, hey, speaking of like reviving games or sequels, Horizon Zero Dawn Remastered, that's coming. All these anniversary consoles. Is there anything genuinely new coming from Sony from your perspective, Jess?
Yes. I was just going to say Astrobot. So there's this new kind of like I'm reading too much into like Sony's mindset or business plan. But with like we have a few stories about this on the site. Lego Horizon Adventures and Astrobot potentially can signal a shift for Sony into kind of leaning into play and leaning into lighthearted experiences that are actually like really well made.
I mean, so, I want the gritty Last of Us style Astrobot game. I know. Guess. Like, somebody kills Astrobot's daughter. What are we going to do?
There's room. Hey, Ellie's in Astrobot. Yeah. You can go find her.
I think what you're saying here is that PlayStation might be moving toward the kind of family-friendly, like, zany but also well-made space that Nintendo has owned for so long.
Exactly. And that's a really, I mean, they're both Japanese companies. I like this kind of vibe from Sony where they're saying, I don't care. I'm just going to keep making this console. I'm going to sell it for $700. I'm going to make a portal. Maybe people hate it. You know, yeah, stuff like that, yeah. Where it's just like they're doing it. They're being kind of quiet. And then until something is suddenly, boop, hey, we have a pro, you know. But no, like Astrobot truly is one of my games of the year. It's incredible. It's worth the price of admission. It's worth getting a PS5 to play, you know. So like maybe it's worth getting a PS5 Pro for some people to play. But
so,
yeah,
Jess, I remember Astro's Playroom from a while ago. Mm-hmm. Is it also kind of like a tech demo of like all the things that you can do with like the PS5
it's
controller?
So much more. So like,
tell me more.
Astro's Playroom is a tech demo, but it's a very well done. It's a full game, but it is a tech demo. And then Astrobot is a full ass game. There are levels. It's Super Mario Brothers for the new generation. So it's like they're just levels upon levels of amazing feeling physics and different textures on the DualSense. And like, no, there are gimmicks like, yeah, you have to blow into the DualSense to do like some of the levels. You like blow leaves or whatever away. But like those are few and far between, honestly. Like it's mostly about just being a really incredible platformer. And the textures of all the environments are so incredible. It's like, it's so responsive. It's really an achievement for Sony. This Team Asobi is really on the mark with this one. Yeah.
We had an interview with them around the PlayStation 5 launch to around Astro's Playroom. Like, and they are the ones who like experiment with like all sorts of different, hey, we have this new controller. Let's experiment with these ideas. That is the development group that like brings those ideas to other developers. It's been 4 years since Astro's Playroom. I actually have not seen many other devs like use the more tactile elements of the PlayStation 5 controller. So I guess that didn't work out so much for Sony because that requires more work, and that's work that doesn't translate to the Xbox for those, you know, those other games too. So it's cool.
Think about it. It's also an accessibility sort of thing too. Like different people have different levels of sensitivity in their hands and such. And like, I mean, even within the normal range, people might think of, you know, texture X as, you know, very pronounced versus other, you know, another person might not notice it. So I completely understand why they didn't run with this. It is a little bit disappointing.
Yeah, would love to see more devs take advantage of it. The other thing we should probably talk about is that I don't think Microsoft is going to do a mid-cycle refresh this time, right? Like, they gave us a $600 Xbox Series X, but it's just an Xbox Series X with more storage and a shinier box, like a shinier package. But I guess, given how badly Xbox is doing hardware-wise this year, we should not expect that, right, Jess?
I know. And I feel like there's a lot of people in denial about, like, how poor sales
very obvious
have been for Xbox. Yeah. Like, guys, first of all, if you're in the U.S. and you're saying Xbox is still alive and well, we are the only market where Xbox is doing okay. Sony has a worldwide market, right? Like all these other consoles, Nintendo has a worldwide market. Xbox really has the US. And even then, it's not doing great.
It's always
not to say that they aren't sold elsewhere, but like they just don't sell well. Yeah. And then Microsoft has also spent a ton of money and reputational goodwill on buying Activision and a bunch of other studios. And now they're kind of reeling, I think, from all this influx that they've gotten. And now they are strapped for cash. And now they're wondering about Game Pass and the future of that. It's not looking amazing. I don't think a refresh is on the horizon.
No.
I haven't gotten that feeling at all.
Not at all.
I think Microsoft
exclusives have been relative snoozers.
Yeah,
they've just
unfortunately
miss after miss. It's unfortunate. Like we see what
it
happens
is
generationally. Like, hey, I was around for the PlayStation 3 and Xbox 360 generation, and at that point we were like, Sony's lagging behind. Sony doesn't understand multiplayer gaming and all this stuff. But that was 20 years ago, folks. So,
but you know,
things change.
God, it was. You're right.
Things change.
But it was also that was also when indie gaming really took off, and like that was the real magic. I feel like we had a quick era where Sony, Microsoft were really like diving into indie development and supporting indie studios and not just buying them and then letting them die, but like actually having like Xbox Live Arcade and all the indie stores. Like, it was really cool. And I feel like, hey, we could lean into that again. Game Pass is not that, right? Like,
yeah. Game Pass is really cool for what it is. And game streaming is really cool for what it is. But I feel like Microsoft is still paying for the sins of the Xbox One. Like, ultimately, like, they cannot get back from the failure of that thing. And this time they were like, okay, more hardware. But I think developers have lost faith. A lot of gamers have lost faith. But also, maybe there is a future in the streaming model. Like, I can put on my Quest, my Oculus Quest, Meta Quest 3, and just play streaming Xbox games. So maybe the vision of what their gaming platform is going to be a little different. We did talk about this last time, one of the last times you were on, Jess. So I'm not counting Microsoft out. You also mentioned they're strapped for cash. I think Microsoft can just, like, they can dump money. They are making infinite money from the cloud. So they
have
can dump money,
right?
This. Yeah.
Yeah, Microsoft has money. Xbox, that's another story.
That's another story. You are correct.
Correct.
There. Cool. Yeah. Cool. All right. Well, anything else you want to mention, Jess? There was some news, but I know we should just let you go so you can go do your other work. And we'll get you back on to catch up on all this stuff. Anything else you want to mention about the PS5 Pro? Will you get one? I think that's the question a lot of people have been asking.
Yeah. Yeah, I was trying to get the 30th anniversary edition this morning, but no dice. but yes, it's worthwhile. I fall into that market where I happen to have the money to burn, and I think it's worth it.
Good for you.
So I'm going to get one. But like, you do not need it. You do not need it. Like, this is a wild, crazed person talking.
I see this is how you are dealing with the limited stock issue, Jess. You just tell everybody, hey, don't buy it. Until I get my order in, please.
Yeah, no, the 30th anniversary, it's so ugly. Don't get it. Yeah.
Don't get it. It's so gross. Please. All right. So where can people find you on the internet these days, Jess?
Yeah, mostly Instagram and Threads at Jess L. Condit.
Moving on to some other news, MetaConnect 2024 was also this week, and there has been a lot of rumors and speculation leading up to this. Joining us to talk about it is our senior editor, Carissa Bell. Hey, Carissa, how's it going?
Hello. I'm here from the metaverse, except not.
Here from the metaverse, which is apparently running 15 minutes later than everybody else. The weird thing about the MetaConnect keynote is like Mark Zuckerberg or whatever, the event took 15 minutes to start. So it was a huge, huge delay. I don't know if they like built that in or whatever. Can you tell us the vibes on the ground, Carissa? Like, what were people saying as the clock ticked down? We were waiting for the MetaConnect keynote to begin.
I mean, there was a lot of anticipation in the room. I was in the press/creator section. So okay. I feel like we kind of react to that a little bit differently. There was lots of joking that, you know, Mark was stuck in traffic or his helicopter was late. There was very bad traffic that morning. So, you know, wouldn't surprise me. There's a lot of moving parts. There's, other people coming on stage later. So it could have been something along those lines. But, you know, there's a lot of talk about, the Quest 3S by then had been rumored. People, you know, I heard somebody say, oh, I think somebody over there is wearing it. You know, lots of Meta Ray-Bans in the audience. Like, people were pretty pumped.
I think the joke there, several people joked, but yeah, there is no traffic in the metaverse, right? Like, if this was entirely virtual, maybe this problem would happen. Although there are stream problems. There are problems with getting live streams going too, as we've experienced. First of all, like, what do you think of the overall event, Carissa? So we saw the Meta Quest 3S, which is a cheaper Quest 3, basically similar, a lot of hardware from the Quest 3, but with cheaper lenses, and I guess a cheaper build in general too. We got a preview of the Orion AR glasses, and we saw a lot of new AI features from them too. Take your pick. I know you tested out the Quest 3S. How was that?
You know, it was really good. As somebody who, I have a Quest 2 at home, so coming from a Quest 2 to that, it's just a huge leap. It doesn't feel like a budget device. You know, you think of like an S model as being something like you're getting less. Honestly, it really didn't feel like that. I know that it has different lenses. It's doesn't have the eye tracking. It doesn't have all of like those super high-end features. But in terms of being able to experience those mixed reality features, you know, doing the browser, you know, having like being able to like move around all the windows and just like, it really did felt like a very big upgrade. It did not feel like, you know, this is, you know, kind of a lower end device, something like that. Like, it really kind of feels like this is like the future of the Quest lineup.
What is funny is that the Quest 3 doesn't have eye tracking, but the Quest Pro did, right? So they did talk about like some other things. Like, in some ways, Zuckerberg was saying like this Quest 3S is actually better at mixed reality than the Quest 3 was. So I have to try this thing to really determine if that's really the case. But it is interesting that they can just like produce this cheaper hardware that is delivering a very similar experience to the Quest 3. When I reviewed that headset last year, I was still telling people like, hey, the Quest 2 is actually still pretty good. And back then, it was on sale typically between like $200 and $300. So there was already a low priced entry into VR. This just seems like another one from them. I'm glad like you seem to like it, Krissa. Do you think this is a smart idea to keep like a cheaper VR thing going for them and for the audience?
Oh yeah, I think so, because I think VR right now, there's some people that are really dedicated. You know, you call them like the VR enthusiasts that will pay for the highest end headset. You know, they want all the biggest titles, things like that. You know, but there's a lot of it is casual gamers. You know, people that maybe like, or maybe kids who want to play Minecraft, or, you know, someone who wants to play, do like some of the workout games. So I think, you know, having, and like, they don't want to pay $500, $1,000 for something. So if you can have something that's $300-$400, you know, I just think that's huge. And just like, it just kind of opens up the market more, you know, to like those kind of like casual, like non-enthusiast gamers. I mean, if you look at something like the Quest Pro, how many people are going to, you know, that was never going to be a mass market device. I actually had an interesting conversation with a Meta executive about that yesterday that you might be interested in. But I just think that
yes,
a lower end device just makes so much more sense.
It's funny. So they announced that they're not going to sell the Quest 2 anymore, but it also seems like somebody just like reached out and like slowly like pushed the Quest Pro underwater. Like, that's what Meta is doing right now. They're like, it's dying. It's dead. It's not coming back. Please buy a Quest Pro if you want it. I can understand why.
You know, yeah. I asked Mark Rapkin about this yesterday. He's the VP of Quest and Horizon at Meta. And I'm going to read you this quote because I think it's pretty telling. He said, "I think while it was a great milestone for the industry at the time in terms of bringing that technology to as many people as possible and not fragmenting the ecosystem, at this point, it feels like it was a little bit more of a detour than a stop on the main express train line."
That's pretty good. That's your headline right there. The Quest Pro was a detour for a lot of people. Almost feels like if that was a longer conversation, like they were aiming for going after whatever Apple was doing with the Vision Pro. Like, last year was just a confusing time. HTC Vive also had something. The Vive Focus 3 also had eye tracking and a whole bunch of stuff too. So everybody was aiming for that. Okay, so Quest 3S seems very good. Let's talk about like the thing I think people are really interested in, which is those Orion AR glasses. They've been rumored before. Zuckerberg at one point like had a whole bunch of them like behind him in a photo, and people were zooming in being like, what is that? These are glasses that look like hipster frames, and they have embedded micro projectors in them that are spitting images onto the lenses. And it's not even glass. It's like, what was the word they used? Like
waveguides.
Carbide. Well, those are the waveguides, but the actual material, it's not glass. It's like silicone carbide, yeah, or something like something that is not just glass. But essentially what this thing is, it's hipster frames, chunky hipster frames that have technology really similar to the Magic Leap 2, which also like had a projector waveguide stuff that spit stuff right onto the, to the lenses. You didn't get to try this yet, Krissa, but just judging like from the reactions there, like what do you, and your experience too, you tested the other ones. What do you think of the Orion AR glasses?
I mean, I think honestly, like I think they have a slightly different approach than what we saw with Snap's spectacles. But I think the bottom line is still kind of the same. Like the technology just won't be ready for several years. I mean, Meta got their glasses down to like a little bit of a smaller form factor, but they also have a wristband and this kind of puck that you need to keep on you. So it's not,
which they didn't talk about in the keynote, by the way. There is a computing puck, a pocket puck, but unlike the Vision Pro, there's no cable connecting it. That's all happening wirelessly,
which is pretty neat.
That's cool. Sure.
I mean, it's a good workaround to not have glasses that look like eclipse glasses, I suppose. But you know, I think they're kind of running into a lot of the same sort of challenges, and that's probably because these are more like physics problems It sounds like the battery life isn't very long. They have a little bit bigger field of view than Snap, but it's still not fully immersive. Snap's field of view and their AR spectacles was, I believe, 46 degrees. And Orion
is almost double.
Orion is 70 degrees. So, you know, it's like pretty big improvement. And then the biggest thing is that both of these glasses cost thousands of dollars to produce. It was, I think, The Verge reported that Orion costs $10,000 right now in terms of like the production costs. So it's going to be years before they can get that cost down, you know, assuming they can improve everything else and make that something that's still at the end of the day probably going to cost $1,000 or $2,000.
It's just funny looking at the messaging of this too. First of all, I'm glad they landed at that number, because as we were doing the live blog, I was like running the calculations in my head. I was like, has to be at least $10,000. I put down $10,000, so good guess there. But yeah, $10,000 glasses that also Meta is not releasing to most developers. It's not selling to the public. It is an internal beta test device, basically. And also they say a few select partners will also get these things. It'll take years for them to even get to the point where Apple is with the Vision Pro, where they have a product that they can actually sell to the public that is under $5,000 at least, right? Like, that is, they are so far behind, but the messaging is like, look at what we did. We are so far ahead.
Yeah.
In a weird way.
And it took them 10 years to get to this point, even.
I was trying to figure out what a good analogy would be for Meta versus Apple, especially, because something that was announced in Meta Connect yesterday was also that they're partnering with Microsoft to do screen expansion, just like Apple does with the Vision Pro. And the best thing I could come up with is that Meta right now is trying to be like the Toyota of like VR, AR.
I don't know about with that.
The Quest 3S at the very least, where like Apple is like, we're not even going to try to do that. We're just the McLaren. We are the supercar of the genre.
I don't, but again, it falls apart because here is Meta with $10,000 glasses, you know, talking about like, we have done the supercar stuff, but we're just not going to sell it to anybody. So they've done like the concept car thing, except it actually works. I don't know. It's like varying degrees of high-end luxury cars, if you want to run with this metaphor, Ben, I guess. But it is weird. It is certainly weird. Like, I don't think it's going to, I think it's going to take them like 10 years to get to a point where this could be something you could sell to everybody. Maybe 5 years to get to Vision Pro. But this is like all the amount of technology in there, the micro projectors, the specialized lenses, the fact that you need a processing puck. And also in the demos we saw, there's a bit of lag. Like, it's not like it's not as fully smooth as the Vision Pro experience is. It's just funny. It's just a funny thing because right now Facebook has Meta has the buzz, right? They have the, like, they're going to get all the headlines for being so far ahead. And the argument around the Vision Pro is that it's kind of a failure. I don't know. I'm looking at the Vision Pro now. I was like, well, it's doing most of these things. It's a lot bigger. It's tethered, but it is out there and it's under $5,000. So to me, it weirdly makes the Vision Pro seem like more of an accomplishment. Maybe I'm just a weirdo though, because I'm the one who's got to spend time with it. Yeah.
I do have to give it to Meta for one thing. Uh-huh. They did clear frames. They let you see inside of the glasses. I've been talking about colorful, clear technology for a while now. People want to see like all
the
interesting architecture.
Well, you're talking about the
Ray-Bans
now.
Yeah. Yeah, the Ray-Bans.
I have a pair.
Oh really?
Oh really?
Nice.
Like,
yes. Please show us. Tune into our live stream, folks.
Yep.
And you can see all this fun stuff.
So tell us more about these Ray-Bans. These mostly just take pictures and
video. It's the same Ray-Bans. It's just a different design of like the ones before. But yeah, explain. So now we are moving over to the Ray-Ban Meta smart glasses. How do these fit into the Vision, I guess? Because it's the same stuff from before. They announced this new translucent, transparent case this week. How does it fit in, I guess, overall in the Vision now?
And I'll say these also have the transition lenses. So if you go outside, they'll become sunglasses. I thought it was very interesting that Zuckerberg referred to these as an AI device. So they started off, you know, they're smart glasses. You can take pictures and videos, listen to your music. I think that's what probably the vast majority of people buy these things for. And they're great at that. But they've also added Meta AI Assistant features over the last year. So, you know, you can look at things and ask it about what you're looking at. Now you're gonna be able to set reminders. You know, I can look at something and say, hey, remind me to buy this next week. It'll take a picture, then remind you about that. They also demoed a pretty cool translation feature that I think, you know, could really move the needle for some people, where they had some MMA fighter come up on stage.
Yeah, they had a UFC guy. They had, like, Zuck was able to, like, put his new interest in there and be like, here, we'll have a live conversation where, like, I speak English, he speaks Spanish, and it translates.
Yeah, and it was, like, a little bit awkward watching it, like, on stage.
Super awkward.
I mean, you can see, like, if you're traveling, or, you know, of course it requires, like, both people to have them. But, you know, you can start to, like, think of a lot more kind of use cases for something like that. You know, it's still, I think the AI stuff still feels a little bit like a novelty. But I think it's interesting that it just shows how a year into this product, Meta keeps adding, like, new features. It kind of keeps giving you, like, new reasons to buy it. You know, I feel like with a lot of things, after a year, they start to feel stale. Meta said, like, this is way more successful than they thought. Like, they had to, like, make more of them than they were expecting. And I think this is, like, really, for them, I think they see this as, like, kind of a sweet spot before AR is ready, that, like, they can get people used to, like, talking to their glasses, having AI features, and kind of get a lot of, you know, the idea of it without having to do the expensive displays.
It gets you used to smart glasses. These are also $300, just like the Quest 3S, by the way. But Zuckerberg has said, like, yeah, they didn't expect it was going to be super popular. They didn't make enough. They've been sold out for a while, and they've, like, adjusted supply lines to start, you know, making more of these things out there. I will tell
who
you.
Who are they popular with? Tell me, who are they popular with?
The people
with?
Who are.
I have not seen.
I've seen them in New York.
On the street.
When I visited New York just for a couple of days, like, I see them out and about. They're hard to tell because they look like normal Ray-Ban Wayfarers, and you have to look really closely for, like, the little camera bits. These transparent ones, it's interesting they did this, because I think the real appeal of these glasses is that they don't look like tech. They look like you just bought a really nice pair of glasses, and you secretly know you can hear podcasts and music in your, you know, in the armband, or you could take video or pictures when you want to. I weirdly am feeling a little compelled. Like, I may reach out to, like, I would like to test these more. I didn't like the first generation at all because they failed at being sunglasses. They looked okay, but they were a little thicker than usual, and they didn't support polarized lenses.
And cameras, like, were terrible.
The cameras
generation.
Were bad. So if you're going to be sunglasses, you have to have polarized lenses, because that's the thing that really protects your eyes. So I require that. Like, I'm just super light sensitive too. So if I'm outside, I'm always wearing sunglasses. So I'm at least considering it more now with some of these AI features. But the thing is, Ben, you want to buy these and you don't want people to see that you're wearing tech, basically. You don't want to walk around like you have Google Glass.
That is kind of the point of any new generation of technology, right? It's just supposed to kind of weave into your life really nicely.
It is. Well, I think wearables is a specific thing. Like, we saw what happened with Google Glass, right? And people saw it, and society was just like, no.
Glass holes.
We reject this. And I think wearables and something you wear in your face or your body is a very specific thing. If somebody goes around wearing a GoPro helmet, you know, in their daily life, you're going to be like, that person's a weirdo. If they do that while they're mountain biking, you're like, that guy's an action, you know, content creator or something. So the way we think about these things is changing too. And I think I was listening to The Verge had a really good interview with Zuckerberg, where he really talks about the vision of everything. And he does seem like he's like, yeah, there's going to be room for cheap VR. There's going to be room for these types of glasses, and also for high-end AR eventually. So the way he's thinking about it is really interesting. Do you think, like, the Ray-Ban smart glasses are more compelling now, Carissa? Do you think more people will jump on them this year?
I think so. I mean, I think that, you know, I don't know that the clear ones, I felt like that was him, like, bragging a little bit.
Oh, yeah,
you
that's
know?
For the super geeks.
Yeah, he even said, you know, when we made them, we wanted to hide the tech, but, you know, now people are excited about it, and, you know, it's only, like, a special edition, so I think that, you know, that was really for kind of, like, the nerds at Kinect. But, yeah, I mean, I think, first of all, like, I think the smartest thing they did was partner with EssilorLuxottica. Like, Ray-Ban is already kind of such an iconic brand for sunglasses. You know, a lot of people want Ray-Bans anyway. And then I think just a lot of people don't care about the AI stuff, but, you know, being able to go for a hike, ride your bike, have your music, being able to, you know, people like being able to take photos of their kids, you know, hands-free. I think those features are just compelling for a lot of people. And I think just as the AI features will kind of just build hype for, you know, the core product, probably.
Probably. Like, I mean, I'm also like, I'm in parent mind too. So I'm like, when I tested those early Ray-Ban glasses, I did take videos of my kids, like just playing around. Like that stuff I cannot capture with my phone or any other way. So that is like the compelling part for me. And the fact that these are not that much more expensive than other typical high-end sunglasses, you can easily spend $200, $300 on sunglasses. So like the price is right. The usability is there. The utility is there. Just seems like a very smart move from them. Ben, it seems like you are not sold on the Ray-Ban. Like what... Are you intrigued by this? Would you wear something that you could record audio or record video just like on the go without doing anything with your hands?
Okay, yeah. So there are some legal issues with this, but I'm just talking about in general and whether you're in New York versus California. I don't know many of the laws in many of the other states. I just know it's hard to do in California and there's just one party consent in New York. You can do whatever the heck you want. Often when I'm talking with people who have kids, like I'll walk them through how to like record themselves on a voice memo. And then I'll say, hey, you know what? You can do this just when you're talking to your kids also, because everyone knows that when you're holding your phone up, that is a cue to the kid to like start acting different versus if you want to have just like a little snippet of a very real interaction, them asking like some really interesting questions, like while you're making dinner or something, and have that forever, it would probably be a better idea to do it on voice memos or maybe now with these glasses, if you could just do like a little gesture and then you get pretty much your eye view of what's happening, mm-hmm. right?
I think that's it.
That's pretty cool.
That's pretty cool. And also the idea of reminders, like hey, Meta, remind me about this party if you're holding something up. Like, I get the appeal. Meta is still a very gross company, and I'm still, like, I am so annoyed about Zuckerberg's whole stance. Like, oh, yeah, we're going to be a politically neutral company, which is more aligning with his own personal politics of just, like, staying out of messes. And that Virgin interview is really good, conducted by Alex Heath. It's worth listening to because you can sort of hear how... I don't know if this guy believes in like democracy or the fate of civilization, but he believes in Meta. He believes in his company's ability to do and make things. And like, that is his political alignment. So I think like now he is just like, okay, if I can just like stay out of like the world, you know, we will always be around even if the streets are on fire or whatever. That's good for us. He also strikes me as somebody who's like, who has a lot of conviction about his own company. So it's like the Steve Jobs thing. You know, I cannot imagine him ever selling Meta or ever leaving Meta and doing anything else. Meta is Zuckerberg at this point.
Recently, yeah. I've been thinking about the book title, You Can't Be Neutral on a Moving Train.
Yes.
Just whenever someone says, oh, I'm... politically neutral.
That is a political
There's no
choice.
Such thing as politically neutral because things are going in one direction or another direction. You can't just be a stick in the mud. The wind will still be blowing.
Yeah. So I have a lot of issues with him. I still have a lot of issues with Meta as a piece of technology. What they're doing with the glasses is cool. So it'll be interesting to see. What do you think about the Orion era glasses as we start to wind things down? Ben, would you want a pair of clear glasses that can just have a lot of cool AR stuff? You know, because this is the idea that you'll have a holographic digital interface on the real world. I hear Zuckerberg saying, like, this can help you be more connected to people without holding up your phone. I don't agree. I think that's actually the exact opposite.
Okay, yeah. But what I really want is a crazy taxi HUD that will just tell me where to go when I'm trying to figure out directions. I just want, you know, that big arrow in the center of my field of view that will say, okay, go this way, go that way.
You can have that, like, yeah.
That is, I think, what I would use glasses like this for at the very beginning. And then, I don't know, it depends on the developers to see whether or not they can figure out anything else that would like make me want to use them for other cases.
Yeah. Krista, like, would you actually use something like the Orion Air glasses in real life?
I mean, I think a lot of it will depend on, you know, how they can develop the ecosystem around it. You know, if it can do like what Ben's saying, put directions around you, you know, instead of FaceTiming, you can have, you know, holographic person, you know, photorealistic image of them, you know, that feels like they're in the room. Like, I think that's cool, but it's going to need to be something that really can be kind of ever present around you. And that's going to take so much work not just on the tech, but the developer ecosystem of just it being able to fit into your everyday life. That's so many applications that need to work on this. So if we got there, yes, I think that would be really cool. But it just right now, it just seems so far off. It's hard to imagine.
I also don't know if Meta is the company to bring this to us, because the whole thing about Zuckerberg's whole new philosophy of life, and I do think he has either a great therapist or a great life coach or both, who has helped him recenter his life around, you don't have to apologize to anybody. You are Mark Zuckerberg.
Also, what was on his shirt? I thought I saw Zuck on the shirt, but I'm pretty sure that it's some archaic
It's it is Latin. It's referring to a Caesar thing.
Yeah, it was a Caesar quote.
Of course.
Yes.
And I think it was the rough translation was without Zuck, not at all. Something like that, which was
Wait, yes. So it's in reference to him?
As a Caesar-like figure.
Yes.
And he's been wearing those shirts for the past year, at least, with his whole
I know,
new,
so you can try to rebrand to be a little bit cooler. Yes. Everybody remembers
he's got the
that
gold chain.
One, the meme of, hot Zuck with, the stubble and everything. And I genuinely think that influenced him to, try to revamp his image a little bit.
I think this is the whole part.
But still... Yeah. The thing that shines through is that he's a nerd.
He's totally a nerd.
He loves ancient Rome way too much. Mm-hmm. He didn't just get a normal chain. He got a chain with a little pendant that had some reference to ancient Rome. It's very
his children are named after Roman emperors.
Oh yes. My God.
Yes.
He has a known obsession with this.
Yeah. I mean, listen.
I know he does.
He has a known obsession. But also, I think he, listening to him in interviews now, this is not the same guy from 10 years ago. Who felt more like a robot, who would go into Congress and look like Data from Star Trek, basically, right? So he just feels fundamentally different. And I don't think it's more humanizing, but I also don't think it's fundamentally trustworthy is the thing. He's doing a lot to dismiss the criticisms people have had against Instagram and how Facebook has affected the world. And part of his whole philosophy now is I'm not going to apologize for these things. Maybe you misinterpreted. He is just philosophically or mentally, emotionally, separating himself from things. To have that person then be in charge of the layer of digital garbage that's going to start to fill our lives, that is a little worrying. It's when you go to a restaurant now and there's just a QR code and there's no menu. It's okay, I look it up on my phone. That's kind of annoying. Now you're going to have a QR code that shows up in your glasses. And then you're going to have the ads that show up alongside that. You're going to have all this. It's not just about having the map when you walk around the street, Ben. It's going to be something they're going to just implement everywhere. And that level
it's going to be the ads on Google Maps, but they're going to assault you an inch and a half or less away from your
basically
retina.
It's going to be the Minority Report thing, which the thing about Minority Report was that they had live holograms out there, but and other sci-fi too. We're not there yet, but until we get there, you can wear glasses that put those holograms in front of your face. So there are cool implementations here, but I am so worried about to me, it's kind of fascinating to see his philosophical shift and how his whole thing now is just, I don't really care. We are going to build AR and we're going to own it. And to hell with kind of the consequences. Are you getting that vibe at all, Carissa?
Did you give him a W accent right there?
Yes.
It's a deep cut. He totally, he even said that he thought he did a lot of damage to his company by spending all that time, apologizing and trying to take responsibility. And on one hand, I kind of get it. Not that I agree with it, but from his perspective, he did all that and it didn't work. So now he's well, we're not going to apologize. How can you blame these huge societal problems on us, a company that only cares about, connecting people and social connection?
In that Virgin view,
on one hand, that is literally leadership. You do have to be kind of uncompromising. On the other hand, I think it was really smart that Dev said years ago that Zuck is a boy king and he's never suffered really. He went from Harvard to Silicon Valley, golden boy, impossibly rich from his early 20s. And that breaks your brain a little
bit. I'm sure it has.
I don't think he quite understands the ramifications of all the things he wants to do.
Yep. I mean, I think that's part of it. I'm not, it's hard to like psychoanalyze the guy, but I'm just going like by what we've seen and what we've covered. And I've covered tech for a long time, so I've like followed him way too closely, unfortunately. But it does strike me as somebody who's like, he may reference Caesar in ancient Rome, but fundamentally, like, he's not somebody who thinks too much about philosophy or, like, I don't know, liberal arts issues. He is fundamentally all about meta, you know, and that's the thing where I don't know. I don't know if, like, it's going to be a good thing to have him building the future of this world. But you know what, folks? Let us know what you think. I'd love to know what our listeners are thinking about all this. Drop us an email at podcast@engadget.com. Carissa, anything else you want to mention about MetaConnect 2024?
Just that I think we're going to see a lot more Meta AI stuff on Facebook and Instagram, including, you know, them automatically putting Meta AI generated content in our feeds. I think that's something, you know, to keep an eye on, because it raises some really interesting kind of uncomfortable questions, in my opinion.
Yeah, so that was also in the Verge interview. It's like the idea of like, our feeds used to be just our friends I follow. Then you added an algorithm. So, okay, people I don't follow, but now I'm seeing them. And now then they added ads and everything too. And now it's like, our AI thought you would like this generated piece of content in your feed. And now I'm starting to be like, this is bad. This is not what I want to live in. It's sort of like they showed off the auto translation stuff too, from some Instagram videos, and the voice, the translated voice, is not too far from the like annoying AI voice that's in Instagram Reels right now and TikTok everywhere. And I'm so goddamn tired of social media videos where it's just robot voice talking to me the entire point. A big thing now, people just like have robot voice say very long Reddit stories. And sometimes I'll be like a minute or two in, I'm like, oh, God damn it, they got me again. This is a Reddit story.
I mean, some of those AI voices are very good. And I've seen some of those like things that read Reddit stories where one of the voices is Matt Berry. Yeah. And I think that's hilarious.
It's funny. But also, I don't know. To me, social media, the social part of social media is seeing stuff from humans. Does AI belong in social media? Is AI part of our society? I'm annoyed about seeing a lot of this stuff too. So yeah.
My Facebook feed is filled with garbage now. And I think it's mostly because there isn't enough stuff from actual people. The people that I know aren't posting, or, you know, if they have kids, if they want to, you know, send out life updates to close family members or something, they'll have a group text. They'll have like a shared iCloud situation or something. They're not posting to Facebook anymore. So Facebook is like, oh, we got to just like find other stuff to put in your feed. And it's not very good. So just imagine that happening way closer to your eyes and ears with a pair of glasses.
Yeah. And also Zuckerberg is like, we don't want as much news. We're hearing people don't like news in their feeds. It makes them feel bad.
Because it's a bummer. It makes people sad. Threads is going to be vibes only.
I do wonder who are the people are complaining about seeing news about reality on those feeds that he is now kowtowing to. Neutral this man. All right. Chrisabel, where can we find you on the internet these days?
You can find me on Threads, Carissa B. I'm occasionally on X. I don't really post anymore. And I'm technically in the Fediverse on Mastodon as well. And Blue Sky, pretty much all of the things.
You're all the things. You're our social reporter. So you got to be on all the things. Check out Carissa's work. And look at all her coverage from MetaConnect 2024. Thank you so much, Carissa.
Thank you.
We're running a bit long today, folks, so we're not going to do other news, although a lot of things have happened. So yeah, be sure to check out Engadget.com. Let's just move straight to our pop culture picks. Ben, what do you got?
So Dev, when you've heard someone say, don't be an ugly American, what does that make you think of? Like, what does an ugly American do?
Like Beavis and Butthead? Like literally just anything, put Beavis and Butthead in a situation. Beavis and Butthead in Europe, you know, or something like that.
Yeah.
Like a cartoon character.
Yeah, it's like, when you hear it, it's usually like, just don't be like a jerk on vacation, like don't be entitled or whatever. I'm actually reading the book, The Ugly American, and it is so good. It was published in the 50s, and it is still so very relevant now. I think if there's any book that hasn't been given the like prestige TV treatment that really needs it, I think that this could do really, really well. The writing style feels so modern. It's not one narrative. It's a bunch of different little vignettes of examples of like diplomatic issues, situations where, you know, politicians are only thinking of themselves. They're thinking very short-sightedly. This book was written by a high-level military officer and a political scientist who was also a military officer. Their point was basically saying the way America is doing diplomacy right now is messed up. It's going to lose us the Cold War. This is very, very like based in the Cold War. So there would have to be some updates if you were to do like a prestige TV adaptation.
I could see how it can translate.
But it is,
yeah.
It's so much fun to read. It's very approachable because each of the chapters is like, you know, maybe 5 or 10 pages each. There are different perspective characters for each chapter. Sometimes a past perspective character will come up in a later chapter. So that's like a perfect situation for an ensemble cast. I would just really love to see this adapted.
I could see this being like a prestige, miniseries, a streaming series or something.
Yeah, exactly. And it made me think a lot of The Wire, the way like it looked very specifically at like all the ways people are kind of sort of trying to do good. But then there are also politicians who are like trying to just, you know, get to the next level of power. So if that worked so well, why not an adaptation of this book from the 50s?
Sounds like you need the guy from Succession involved in this one. Like Jesse Armstrong would be great. Armando Iannucci, who he's also worked with on a few projects like that. Yeah, that sounds great. I've not heard much about this book, actually, but I think maybe in college I remember like people talking about it at some point. So
I think it's really approachable, and I think it would be fun to read if you have some reading time like every now and then. Also, it's a great book to pick up and put down because the chapters are so short and each one is kind of a self-contained story.
Cool. Dig it. I'll check that out, Ben. Thank you so much. I've got something that is not nearly as like, erudite or worldly or academic, I guess. But hey, I want to mention Dan Da Dan, which is the new anime series that's launching on Netflix in early October, October 3rd. Launching on Netflix and Crunchyroll. It's out in theaters right now, actually, too. The first 3 episodes are in theaters, which is a really cool concept. And hey, sometimes I like to talk about anime-ass anime shows, and this is one of those things. Like, this is a show that is distinctly aware that it's an anime series. It's also from the studio behind Devilman Crybaby and Scott Pilgrim Show, Science Saru. So you know, like, the animation is going to be wild and creative and just fun. It's one of those things that just, like, starts in the middle of everything. Like, there is no room to breathe. It is about a high school girl who does not believe in UFOs, but she does believe in ghosts. And she meets an otaku boy who does believe in UFOs, but does not believe in ghosts. And so they form a relationship. They sort of like challenge each other to like, okay, prove your position right. Things get crazier from there. Boy gets possessed. Girl gets, her psychic abilities activated by aliens. It's a typical story. But, good stuff. This is just like a good anime. If you'd like, if you liked Furikuri from decades ago, it is very much the same thing. Just like wild, kinetic, energetic, really, really deep anime lore here. It's also just like a good looking show. Not something you should probably watch with kids or younger family members because it just gets...
I was going to ask about
that.
It's
a little wild. Listen, if you watch Devilman Crybaby, which Saru also did... that show is just a bloody wild mess too. So this is pretty much up there just in terms of like maturity, I guess. But it's a lot of fun. It's really funny and the music is excellent. It also has like one of the best anime openings I've seen in a very long time. So Dan Da Dan, Dan Da Dan. That's basically the opening. Like just Dan, Dan, Dan Da Dan. It is fantastic.
This is making me think about Bo, but that's very different.
It's very, very
I think
different.
That is probably sillier and also like more PG.
Probably more PG. But yeah, okay, Dan Da Dan is great. Check it out. Netflix, Crunchyroll, or in theaters now. If you're an anime fan, take advantage because like seeing this thing on a giant screen is totally worth it.
So that's it for our episode this week. thank you for listening. Our theme music comes to you by game composer Dale North. Our outro music is by our former managing editor, Terrence O'Brien. The podcast is produced by me, Ben Elman. You can find Devendra online at...
at Devendra on Twitter, Mastodon, Blue Sky, all over the place. And I podcast about movies and TV at the Filmcast at thefilmcast.com.
You're going to have to check out our YouTube live streams to see my old X handle, because I'm not going to talk about it on the audio version, but I do have it on YouTube, so go check that out. Send us an email at podcast@engadget.com. Leave us a review on iTunes and subscribe on anything that gets podcasts.
I think Sony's missing a large opportunity of just like a lot of posters saying, come get your pisser.